Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Modern Adventurer podcast, where explorers and adventurers tell their stories. Coming up.
It was only two of us, me and my dad, and no one else around. And I dropped my kite and the wave took it and I was leashed onto my kite. And before you knew it, I'm just underwater being dragged by the wave. So the wave power and energy is in the kite. And I'm there underwater being like sort of hogtied and dragged backwards. And it's just going and going and going and going. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going on for a long time. And then I'm trying to reach behind my back for the quick release. But because I'm being dragged too fast, I can't actually get to it.
I'm John Horsfall, and on this weekly podcast, we talk to adventurers and explorers from around the world who have made remarkable and daring journeys in recent years. From Everest climbers to polar explorers, world record holders, and many more. I hope this podcast sparks ideas and inspires you to explore and go on your own grand adventure. My next guest is an adventurer and kiteboarding extraordinaire. He has some remarkable stories from his times traveling all over the world, from Dominican Republic to Sri Lanka to Cuba. We talk on the podcast about some of his incredible experiences over the years. We also talk about his passion for the extreme and how he overcomes fear in doing some of these incredible stunts. And I am delighted to introduce Tom Court to the podcast.
John, thanks for having me, mate. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's absolutely great to have you on. I haven't seen you in quite a few months. It's awesome to sit down and actually have a proper good chat.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it's been great to catch up with a fellow adventurist. It's been a strange time for all of us, I think. So it's nice to, you know, to be doing these things and to share experiences at this time.
Well, for people listening, Tom is a kite boarder, kite surfer, whatever you want to call it, and has done some incredible stuff over the years. For people listening, let's start at the beginning. How did you actually start down this sort of path?
Well, I've always been interested in travel. And I guess for me, I've always used sport as a vehicle for travel. And kite surfing for me came along at a lucky time in my life where I was young enough to sort of get into it at a good time for the sport and a good time for myself. And that opened up for me, like the opportunity to travel with kite surfing. I learned to kite surf. My dad taught me to kite surf when I was about 11 years old, out in the Canary Islands. We were just on a family holiday out there. And that's sort of where I first like learned and really got my hands on a kite, and then since then I never looked back, really. And kite surfing's been a part of my life and a part of my career now since I can remember. So yeah, I was very lucky to have that opportunity.
Because you, before you sort of did a lot of traveling, you were sort of traveling up for competitions and winning medals, I presume.
So that's how it started. My dad taking me around to competitions in the UK and doing the British Championship Series in kite surfing, which realistically at the time was just a really good way to have a nice weekend and a fun time and catch up with like-minded people doing a similar sport. And then I won the British title. I think I won the British Juniors in 2002, and then I won the top flight after that. And then once that sort of the ball was rolling in that direction, then I started looking to the world tour and did about 5 or 6 years traveling around on the world tour. And then that sort of, you know, naturally got me into the motion of the whole thing, really.
Well, you have the sort of privilege of living on the Isle of Wight, which is sort of your sort of background playground, as one might say. You had some pretty awesome sort of content shown over the summer, and the summer is sort of taking you all over the place, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been a strange couple of years, I guess, for everybody around the country. But yeah, living on the Isle of Wight is definitely a blessing when it comes to, you know, sports and access to the nature and, like, you know, getting in the water. Yeah, and that's been a big part of you know, me having access to sport was living on the Isle of Wight and just, you know, getting out and see as much as I can. So yeah, it's been a nice place to live over the years. I mean, initially with travel and like getting away, it seemed like a disadvantage because obviously I'd have to get the ferry off the island every time and then a taxi to the airport. So, you know, what started as a struggle, I guess, when I was younger, or an added cost at least, has become very much an advantage, you know, nowadays, that's for sure.
And so with the sort of with kitesurfing, I mean, it's sort of your passion is for this sort of extreme element of the sport. I mean, we had Megan Hine on a few weeks ago, sort of talking about sort of fear. And with kitesurfing, you are throwing yourself up many, many meters into the air. How did this sort of progression to sort of conquer that fear or bringing yourself into your sort of element of pushing it sort of one step up every time? Was it a progression or have you always had this sort of drive to push yourself further and further?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think in risk and taking risk is a massive topic. And it's, you know, over recent months as well, like fear and other things have come into other elements of our life that you can see holding you back or doing things like that. And I think, yeah, learn like through extreme sport, through kitesurfing and through taking risk. I think the more you do it, the more you become capable of doing it, and the more you look for it, and the more you realize actually that a risk isn't necessarily a bad thing. And for me now, you know, I got to the stage where I really am like searching for risky things and, you know, looking for the adrenaline that is associated with pulling something risky off or pushing yourself to the limits, you know, physically or mentally. And I think, you know, sport and kitesurfing got me into that from an early age. And yeah, now at the age of 30 plus, it's like become something more systematic in my life where I, you know, I know that I need risk. I know that I need to push myself. And I feel that, you know, I don't shy away from that. But it's just learn, you know, it's all about learning to kind of manage it and choose your risks wisely and kind of calculate those risks before you take them on. But definitely, you know, taking risk is a big part of sport. And it's something, you know, that gives me a lot of kicks and that I now look for. Yeah.
The sort of drug of adrenaline, you're sort of looking for that next.
Yeah. I mean, it's something you don't get from doing anything other than pushing yourself to the limit, you know, to the limits or close to the limits. And it's not something you can cultivate really in any other way. So in a way, it's a very healthy addiction, assuming you you can calculate the possible risks, you know, well enough.
Amazing. So your, as you said, your trips have taken you all over the world, from Sri Lanka to Morocco to all sorts of incredible places. What's the one that sort of sticks out for you?
Yeah, I had different phases of my career where I've been traveling for different reasons. Like traveling for competition is very different to traveling, you know, for free riding, which I'm doing now, where I'm very much absorbing myself into the location, the place, and looking for, you know, different experiences within that rather than staying in one place and pushing yourself from a competitive angle. So I feel like, you know, earlier in my career, I got to see a lot less of the places that I was traveling to because I was very focused on, you know, certain specifics, even though it was definitely the reason why I traveled so much was for the sport. But I think, you know, the recent trip that I've just done felt to me like one of the more adventurous trips that I've done in a long time, because I was coming off the back of COVID and doing not much. Getting out into the Sahara Desert and just disappearing into the middle of nowhere with no one around. For me, that sort of exposure and separation is something that you can't you know, easily get these days. So yeah, for me, something like that is very exciting.
So you've had a recent one in the Dominican Republic. What happened there?
Yeah, Dominican Republic's it's a paradise in many ways. It's a great island. I mean, it's next to Haiti. It's on the same island as Haiti. But it's, you know, it's blessed with really good wind conditions and two seasons of the year. So good wind and good waves. And it's pretty much 30 degrees most days. So it's, you know, it's a tropical island. Unfortunately, I left my laptop on the plane on the way out there this time around. So I immediately landed on a back foot, never found my MacBook Pro, didn't get any response from the airline on that either. So I sort of handicapped myself straight away on that trip. And the rest of the trip was sort of, dealing with the repercussions of that. But those are things that can happen. I think you have to just soak them up as you go along.
Because kitesurfing was quite a sort of new sport in the sort of grand schemes of it. And I suppose it's been growing in popularity over the past sort of 20 years or so. Is your aim to continue to sort of promote it? Are you doing lots of work to sort of encourage more and more people into kitesurfing?
The ability for a sport to give you access to a lifestyle, or, you know, create the ability for you to take risks, or, you know, get out there and experience things because you're focused on a sport. For me, that's a very powerful motivation tool that I think a lot of people lack. Like if you imagine going on a trip for sunbathing, I mean, I can't really even imagine it, but like there's very little reason for you to get up and go and do it, you know, and it's very easy to give up on that trip for whatever reason that might be. Whereas if you're going somewhere to do a sport, to chase the wind, to access things that you can't get in the place that you're currently at, that's where the power of sport really lies for me, especially nowadays. It used to be motivated by competition and things like that, but yeah, I mean, my drive within the kitesurfing industry is to promote it for the amazing lifestyle possibilities and the amazing I think impacts it can have on your life. And then yeah, other than that, I like to represent kiteboarding in a visual sense across my YouTube channel, and keep putting out, you know, content that really represents kiteboarding for what it is. And I think, you know, now especially is a good time for kitesurfing, because with the entry to the Olympics in the next round, it's going to get a lot more visibility. And I think the industry has been on a sort of indefinite rise since I started the sport at the age of 11. And now it's looking like, you know, something very popular with a lot of very engaging and interesting people and, you know, taking part in it. So it's quite still an exciting time for kitesurfing, I think.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people. And as you say, you travel around the world sort of probably with the same sort of group of people who are always competing. What do you think separates like the exceptional ones from the good ones in terms of how do you push yourself to becoming number one in kitesurfing?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. I think to become number one in anything you do in life, you have to have a certain psychology. You have to be very single-minded and highly motivated for that end, you know, to become number one. I mean, there is only one number one, but that's not to say there's only one place to be good at something, you know, like there's, you know, having a bigger industry around the sport, I think makes a big impact and a lot of space for other people that have talents that aren't necessarily winning. I mean, myself and my career has always been motivated by the lifestyle that the sport can offer rather than, you know, winning the next event. I mean, I always enjoyed that part of it and got kicks and enjoyed the competitive side of it. But now it's abundantly clear that, you know, you're not always going to be number one. You can't always win, but there are always opportunities within a growing industry for people to represent different areas or inspire people in different ways. And I think, you know, yeah, with the content generation and YouTube and different things that are going on there now, yeah, it's opening doors for possibilities to be good at other things within an industry. So yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing for me, I think, about the development and how things are going.
Do you think your psychology has changed over the years from, as you sort of said, from the sort of competing to more like now, more of the enjoyment of the sport?
Yes, definitely, definitely. And a big part of that for me, and I think a big part of any athlete's career, it was injury and coming across, you know, injuries that really prevent you from and hold you back from doing the things that you enjoy doing. And then the process of overcoming those injuries, you know, and the whole process involved with coming back from injury, that has definitely changed my psychology into something much more aligned with, you know, appreciating the moments that the sports can offer, rather than just being, you know, highly motivated in one direction to achieve the pinnacle of achievement. It gives you a much more rounded perspective on, I think, what the sport can offer you in general.
So what happened with this injury?
Well, I've blown my ACL twice in my right knee and once in my left knee. So I've had knee surgery three times. The first knee surgery took something like 12 months to come back from. And then the second one, I did it again in competition, in the same competition, exactly a year later, doing the same trick. It was like a big deja vu, and I blew the same ACL second time around, but the second time around takes a lot longer. So it took like 15 months to get back from that. So when you know, encompass a 3-year span of coming up against not being able to do sport and not being able to do things that you enjoy or work or anything like that. And my sole realization out of that was I just need to get back to a place where I can enjoy what I love doing. And that was my motivation, you know, to come back from it all. I think if I didn't have the sport, I would have found it very difficult to get over the injuries.
I think I've certainly got an appreciation that the sort of psyche of an injury, especially if sport and exercise or anything around that is your life, getting injured just absolutely knocks you for six. And if it takes away your whole identity, it certainly takes a lot to sort of come back from that. And you have to sort of completely change your mindset with it. I certainly felt that when you get injured, like, you have some really dark days and you have to sort of find the route at the end of the tunnel, which is for you kite surfing. And as you say, you went from that competing to now sort of more of the enjoyment sense.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I mentioned I did it twice on one knee, and the profound realization that I had when I felt it happen the second time was that I had not actually really learned anything from the first time it happened. So, and the first time round, the recovery process for me was very much to getting back to where I was prior to the injury. So, you know, becoming the person that I had been and getting back to competition and getting back into competing and getting better again than I was previously. And I just realized, actually, on the second time round, you have to become a new person. You have to become somebody who you will be, you know, not who you were. And injury is a very, it's the, you know, most educational process that I think anyone can go through. And I think, yeah, having a focus, having a drive, and having a sport and something that you know that you love is key to getting through it. And also the knowledge that you will be somebody new after it rather than the person you were before is a vital piece of the puzzle, I think, to getting through it.
Yeah, it's that sort of process of who you are to who you're about to become. I think it's definitely important. And for anyone who's had long-term injuries, I think would understand. But that's, what, 4 years with three ACLs? That's 4 years of your career on the sidelines.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, this is where I kind of knew initially, you know, every athlete is aware of the injury risk. And I kind of knew that the knees were a weak point in kite surfing. And I was expecting it in many ways, but doesn't help you when it finally happens. But I'd been filming and building content libraries and, you know, really kind of almost without realizing it, investing time in things that I could do when I was injured. So, you know, within that time, I released a movie sort of like called The Freeride Project on YouTube. There's four of them now. I've done four movies. Yeah, it's like a 45-minute sort of edit about, you know, the kitesurfing industry and getting behind the scenes and like how boards are made and, you know, the life of the riders and kind of absorbing myself into the industry in other ways, and kind of being entrepreneurial in a sense of how do I stay in this industry? How do I add value to this industry? And how can I, you know, retain my, you know, position within it over the recovery period. And I was lucky enough to have sponsors that really, you know, stuck with me through that and supported my vision. So it was, you know, in the end has become a very positive process in my life. And I think, you know, it could have easily gone the other way. Very easily.
I think, you know, when it comes to finding out who you want to become through injury, I think it's an amazing sort of transition, and one that, as you say, for me, for you, it was trying to stay in the game. For me, it was trying to sort of stay in the game. And, you know, it's why, one of the main reasons why I set up the podcast. And through it, you actually discover so much more, because I think maybe like you, I was very focused down one path, and injury sort of makes you step back and sort of look at the bigger picture.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. It like opens. I mean, if you don't take the time to open up and to look at, you know, the bigger picture, and you focus on the minutiae of your injury, you don't get the perspective. And I think that's a big part of the recovery process, or a successful recovery process rather, you know, is to really do that and to kind of expand your mind around the topic and absorb in the process of recovery and let that journey become the journey, you know, like it's an important part of it, to kind of let yourself go into the, don't fight the process, you know, let it in somehow. And really, you can make almost anything positive for yourself over time. So, yeah, it's kind of what I came away from it with. Yeah, and I'm still kite surfing. And I was told many times that I would never walk or never do sport again by a lot of doctors. And you just think, you know, mate, you don't know me. So, I'm going to get back to it.
God, that's incredible. As you say, you've sort of been traveling over the world pre-COVID, let's say, quite a bit, sort of from place to place. Cuba was one of your many interesting trips. What were you doing over there?
Yeah, so Cuba was quite a while ago now, but there's a few videos on my YouTube channel about that. But I went to Cuba when they opened up the tourism to America. And as part of my role, you know, within the brands that I ride for and, you know, within the kiteboarding industry, I've done quite a bit of like location exploration in terms of kiteboarding development, where's good for kiteboarding, you know, how countries or tourism boards would use sport and kitesurfing to, you know, encourage tourism in their areas. And that was, you know, a big part of my role there, going to Cuba, was to represent kite surfing as a sport in a way, and you know, paint the picture as how you can develop tourism around sports and around an active lifestyle that really can benefit, you know, the area and the country. And it can be a very positive way to get tourism into your area, you know, because you've got people coming for interest, revolving around nature. They're very aware of their surroundings. They're not the tourists that are going to like destroy the environment, or, you know, they're there to appreciate what's going on. And they're also there to spend money on what they love doing. So it's not a begrudging, you know, relationship with tourism in that respect. So there's a lot of positive angles to sports development. And yeah, I think, you know, many trips I've done in the past, including Sri Lanka, actually, I went to Sri Lanka in 2005. And when I first went there was hardly anyone kitesurfing, like, and, you know, not much going on, no tourism. And we found this lagoon in the north of Sri Lanka called Kalpicha. And I mean, there were a few people kiting there and maybe a few kite schools just setting up, but like, you know, maybe three or four people on the water at a time in a village with nothing but fishermen. And then now, you know, skip forward, like almost, yeah, well, nearly, you know, 15, 20 years later, It's one of the most well-known kite spots in the world. It's got like high-end kite surfing setups there, and you know, safaris that go off down the coast on boats, and it's got a bustling, productive, you know, Western tourism industry that is symbiont with the local village and the local town. And you know, it's, you've just got, you know, people coming in for the interest of it, and you've got people, you know, villages, like hundreds of people, thousands of people living off that source of income. So it's I've seen the very, very positive side of what kitesurfing can be for countries and people.
Yeah, I think when it sort of comes to it, you know, kitesurfing has this sort of incredible lure. You know, even got me back at, you know, when I was trying to learn how to kitesurf. Won't go into detail of that experience. No, it's got this incredible lure where these places can easily sort of set up, and it's just the most incredible, I don't know, sort of picturesque view to sort of, as you say, just shoot up and down the coast on.
It's just an insane sport for exploration. Now, even around here in the UK, so much, so many good spots for it, and so many good opportunities to learn. I mean, yeah, it's a great place to, a great way to experience like everything in, you know, coastal direction, I guess.
So I have to say, over the years, we've seen a few sort of probably viral kitesurfing videos. Have you ever tried to kitesurf a hurricane?
Oh, yeah. I've kitesurfed big storms before, yeah. I've kitesurfed, 100-mile-an-hour winds down here on the Isle of Wight. Definitely kitesurfed a few hurricanes in the Caribbean. I haven't filmed them, but I've just been out for fun, you know.
Yeah, and what is it, up in Necker Island? I know Richard Branson is always very, very keen on his kite surfing, where they sort of just lob you off a sort of rock on the side, and they just sort of drift round and round and round slowly to, for about sort of 30 seconds, just sort of, what's it, paragliding almost with the kite.
Yeah, that's a friend of mine, Nick Jacobson, jumped off the top of Necker Island. That's definitely not one that they're going to do to the average guest, I don't think. But I've been out to Necker and sort of kite surf with Richard a few times, and yeah, I mean, the one amazing thing about the kite surfing industry is it's very close knit, and there's a lot of really interesting people that do kite surf, and if you're really ingrained in the sport, there's probably not many places you haven't been with it, you know. So it's there's a lot of people that love kite surfing out there, and a lot of amazing things to be done with a kite, that's for sure.
Are you planning to push yourself for a new one?
I'm always pushing myself, definitely. One way or another, I think that's something I realize, you know, over time, you need goals, you need to push yourself, you definitely need motion. So I'm always looking for fun videos to make and fun stunts to do. I've got my eye on a few of the cliffs down here on the Isle of Wight that haven't been done before. So we'll see. Watch this space.
Oh, well, we'll have to follow your little Instagram closely then.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say it hasn't been that long since I've got over injury, so I'm not jumping off any cliffs just yet. But once I feel the itch again, you know.
Yeah, it'll suddenly be like, injury. No, I've forgotten all about that. And I suppose, you know, apart from your injuries, have there been many close scares on these sort of trips? Because, you know.
Yeah, it's true. Wave trips. I mean, waves are always dangerous. I mean, the ocean's always dangerous. Every time you do something stupid in the sea, you've got to be, you know, you got to have your eyes open, you know, like she's a cruel mistress. I nearly drowned in Peru. I did a kite surfing trip with my dad, actually, down the coast of Peru, and some of the best waves in the world break along the coast of Peru. And they're really long waves. And I was out there, it was only two of us, me and my dad, and no one else around. And I dropped my kite and the wave took it and I was leashed onto my kite. And before you knew it, I'm just underwater being dragged by the wave. So the wave power and energy is in the kite. And I'm there underwater being like sort of hogtied and dragged backwards. And it's just going and going and going and going. And I'm like, oh my God, this is going on for a long time. And then I'm trying to reach behind my back for the quick release, but because I'm being dragged too fast, I can't actually get to it. So I was luckily enough the wave kind of let the kite go, and I managed to get up and get a breath before before really anything too bad happened. But yeah, things can happen very quickly. You just have to be kind of aware and ready for it, you know.
Well, it's an amazing sport, and I suppose anyone sort of listening and still very keen, what's the sort of one thing you would recommend for people wanting to get started in kitesurfing?
Yeah, so getting started in kitesurfing is one of the most fun things. I think, like, what you've got to bear in mind, that your first contact with the sport will be, you know, a little overwhelming. There's a lot going on. You've got a kite, you've got a board, you know, there's a lot to, like, kind of seemingly process with it. So the best thing you can do is go to a school, find a local, you know, coach or teacher, and really get some time where the education process at the very beginning is ingrained in you, you know, like how to rig up your kite, how to, you know, really be safe for yourself, because that will stand you in great stead further down the line when it comes to being independent and, like, you know, being able to assess the weather correctly and the wind. And, like, there's a lot of elements in it that you actually probably wouldn't consider, but that's definitely the way to get into it is go to a school or a coach and get them to, you know, invest some time in you to kind of get that first contact point.
Oh, nice.
And they'll also have their own gear as well, and you can trash that rather than trashing your own. So I would, 100% recommend trashing someone else's gear first before you invest, you know?
Yeah, no, that's always best. Go and learn and then get your own.
Yeah. And there's, you know, safety elements and community guidelines and things that you need to, like, you know, learn. It's like when I learned, it was wild, wild west, you know, like you just go down the beach, rig up and send it. And there was no one around. There was no, like, you know, there was nothing. There weren't even kite schools. So now the gear is so much easier, so much safer. You know, you've got a system in place and schools there to really, like, teach you. So the learning process can be anywhere between, like, a week or, like, even a couple of days if you really, like, just get into it, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tom, these have been absolutely awesome to hear about. There's a part of the show where we ask 5 questions to each guest each week. With the first being, what's the one gadget that you always take with you?
Whew, okay, so definitely a camera. But then it's probably an iPhone these days, you know. So, I mean, probably the iPhone is the gadget that I would take with me now. Having just come back from the Western Sahara with nothing but my iPhone, I can tell you it's probably a good one gadget to have.
A little lifesaver.
Yeah, it's a lifesaver. Yeah, but a camera, a laptop, and a phone, and that's it. That's all you need in life, really.
Yeah. What about your favorite adventure book or travel book?
My favorite adventure book is probably just my diary, I reckon. Just take the diary, write it down.
The diary is of Tom Court.
The diary is of Tom Court. I'm working on it. Yeah, there's unbelievable ones in there.
You'll have your memoirs in, like, when you're 70, of this sort of vast encyclopedia.
Yeah, it's true. You don't only really get into the really interesting stories once you get a bit older. I thought I used to have a lot to write about, but I've definitely got more now, that's for sure.
Why are these sort of adventures important to you?
So, I mean, they're really important to me. I mean, getting yourself out of your comfort zone, pushing, for me personally, getting myself out of my comfort zone and looking to expand my knowledge, you know, whether that's meeting different people, seeing different places. A large part of my education in life, I feel, has been through travel, through experience, through, you know, meeting people and through sport. So, like, for me, I find it's a personal development thing for me as much as the enjoyment of life at the time. It's about, you know, really developing yourself and not letting yourself get too comfortable. I think that's a big thing, you know, like, getting too comfortable for me is a problem, you know, and I think that's really important to realize.
Yeah, I think someone that was saying yesterday, it was basically saying that the best things in life always come from uncomfortable situation. No one ever sort of goes, oh my God, the best time happened when we were super comfortable, just relaxing.
Yeah. Well,
it's like sort of pushing yourself to achieve a goal or to.
Yeah. And I think hardship, whichever way you look at it, like hardship flowers some of the best art, some of the best inspiration, some of the best, you know, feats of human endeavor come from hardship. So I think, you know, not being afraid of putting yourself in a situation that is uncomfortable is a big thing. And having sat at home on the sofa for a long period of time, for the longest period of time I've ever done, I now know really the value of getting back to pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone. I think it's so valuable for me and for it can be valuable for a lot of people.
Very nice. What about your favorite quote?
My favorite quote? Oh, you put me on the spot here. I don't know. There's a lot of quotes about, isn't there? I think one that's cropped up recently was, life's not about learning to weather the storm. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Ah, yeah, that's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. The storm might not ever pass. That's the issue.
Yeah.
Somebody just randomly Instagrammed me that not too long ago, and it's right. I mean, the storm doesn't pass. Life is the storm. I think is the thing that you need to come to terms with.
Yeah, people listening are always keen to travel and go on these sort of grand adventures around the world, like yourself. What would you recommend for people wanting to get started?
I would say, I mean, so I host a series of travel trips personally, and I know that there's a lot of people that do this sort of thing that are sort of adventure based with a coaching element. If you're not comfortable traveling on your own, or you know, or you feel like there's a, you know, you want to get started with it, I would say something like that is a great way to start. You know, book a trip with somebody that does it a lot, and get some experience, learn from people that do a lot and see how people's psychologies are. And also, once you get the ball rolling with these things, you meet people, you know, you meet people that are also doing it. And before you know it, you've got friends that are traveling, and then you've got connections, and you've also then got focus of where to go next because somebody else is going there or whatever. So yeah, I mean, yeah, without self-promoting too much, check out my Slice of Life camps and stuff. But yeah, like look for something like that.
And finally, what are you doing now, and how can people follow you in the future?
At the moment, I'm back in the UK for the next month or so. I'm doing a display at the Southampton Boat Show with Flight Board, which are these new electric foil boards. That will be for the most of September. And there's also a kite surfing event down here in the UK called the Kite Surfing Armada, which I'll be at for a weekend. But yeah, follow me on Instagram at Caught in the Act. And yeah, subscribe to my YouTube channel as well. Just Tom Court Kite on YouTube, and you'll be able to follow along on my various activities and missions.
I did see you in the press the other day on that little flyboard.
Yeah. So I did. There's another mission that came off the top of my head. I wanted to see if I could commute from the Isle of Wight to Poole Sandbanks. For lunch on an electric foil board, on a flight board, and I managed to pull it off. Like in between a few trips, we just did 30 miles over water in a suit on an electric foil board, and got to lunch on time. So that was pretty sick, actually.
Did that suit manage to weather the storm?
yeah, the suit's still there. Yeah, it got wet at the end. You have to watch the video, but it did get wet. But yeah, no, it's really cool. And it was on one of the hottest days of the year that we had so far. And yeah, it sort of went all over the press, really. Went to the Times and the Telegraph and all over. But I think, you know, just encouraging people to do things differently. And there's quite a good, innovation element there with, eco water use and different ways to enjoy yourself. So yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah, they're pretty cool little boards, I have to say.
Yeah, they're awesome bits of kit. It's like backcountry snowboarding on flat water. Yeah, it's really good.
Just grab it and off you go.
Yeah, just pull the trigger and just send it.
And finally, I'm sure everyone is wondering what's next for Tom Court.
It's a difficult one. At the moment, I haven't got anything in the diary. I've got a free. So that's the most worrying thing for me generally, is having nothing in the diary. I mean, I've got September's planned. It's all around here in the UK. But then after that, I have nothing solid. But it might be back to Dominican Republic, maybe even Brazil for the winter season. And then maybe some time in the Canary Islands before coming back to the UK at the beginning of summer next year.
Very nice.
So it could be worse. Could be worse. I mean, let's see. You don't know what's possible at the moment. So.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Well, Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to your stories and about your life.
It's been an interesting one. It's always interesting to talk about these things. They stay very much under the surface unless I'm asked.
I'm sure there's a few more stories to come in the future as well.
Yeah, mate, we could sit here for hours.
Well, again, thank you so much.
No worries. Thank you. Thanks for the time and thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the podcast on YouTube now, and don't forget to subscribe and sign up to the monthly newsletter, which is in the description below. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, tag me on Instagram at John Horsfall. I'm always keen to connect with other adventurers, and I look forward to next week for another fascinating tale of adventure. But till then, have a great day and happy adventures.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.